Welcome to SCOTUSCast. On June 28, 2007, the U.S. Supreme Court delivered its decision on the Panetti v. Quarterman case. The court was asked to consider the standard for when a person is too crazy to execute under the 8th and 14th Amendments. In this episode of SCOTUSCast, Bill Otis, former special White House counsel under George H.W. Bush and former chief of criminal appeals in the Eastern District of Virginia, U.S. Attorney's Office, offers his own analysis of the recent decision. As always, the Federalist Society itself takes no position on any particular legal or public policy issue. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker. And now, Mr. Bill Otis.
The court today decided by a 5-4 vote an opinion in a Texas death penalty case by the name of Panetti v. Quarterman. The majority decision was written by Justice Kennedy with the four liberals. There was a dissenting opinion by Justice Thomas, joined by Justices Roberts, Scalia, and Alito. The basic question in the case, or the question for which the case had become known, was whether the Federal Court of Appeals, the Fifth Circuit, had adopted too restrictive a standard for judging whether a defendant was too mentally incompetent to be executed. In fact, there were two preliminary issues in the case, both quite important, and the dissenting and majority opinions reached very different conclusions on both of them. Before getting to those, however, let me just say that this case is 15 years old. The defendant was convicted in 1992 for having murdered his estranged wife's parents. He got up one morning, put on camouflage, went over to their house, and in front of his wife and daughter, killed both of them. After that, he held his wife and daughter hostage for a day before he was apprehended. At his trial, he sought and succeeded in representing himself and presented as his defense that he was insane. He presented an insanity defense, and indeed insanity has been a feature of this case from the time that it started. He also presented, after he was convicted and his direct appeals had lost, he presented a federal habeas claim that also was rejected. And most recently, he presented a second federal habeas claim, arguing that by now, which was several years ago, I believe it's 2003, he was too insane to be executed. His basic position was that, yes, he understood that he was going to be executed, and he understood the state's offered reason for the execution was that he had intentionally murdered two people, but that was not the real reason. The real reason he maintained, that his mental state was in this position, that the state was executing him to stop him from preaching. This claim was initially presented to the state courts. It was denied by the state courts. And the federal district court denied his habeas petition under the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act, which forbids the presentation of a second or successive claim. And the Fifth Circuit affirmed that. Today's decision by the Supreme Court rejects it. In doing that, it reached, of course, first the jurisdictional issue. The court determined, the majority determined, again with Justice Kennedy doing the writing, that even though under the literal terms of the AEDPA, this did count as a second or successive petition, that habeas petition, that under the precedent surrounding the AEDPA, this should not count in the sense of barring federal court jurisdiction, essentially because a prisoner could not know until a time approaching his execution whether he was too insane to be executed. And of course, executing an insane person is impermissible under the Eighth Amendment under Ford versus Wainwright, a case decided about 20 years ago. The dissent's answer to that is that the mental incompetency claim could easily have been preserved in the first habeas petition and then merely renewed in the form of claiming that his incompetency continued, the defendant's incompetency continued to the present day. The majority rejected this as a requirement that would make defense counsel essentially present a claim that defense counsel knew would be unripe. In my own experience as a prosecutor, I don't think the fact that defense counsel presents unripe or in other ways unmeritorious claims is something that is frequently a deterrent from filing them, but that was the majority's view of things. Secondly, the majority held that the Texas state courts had unreasonably denied Panetti an adequate opportunity to establish his insanity. It pointed out that there was even though there was ample evidence or ample evidence could be developed to show insanity, that the state procedures were too sparse and too sparing to enable Panetti to pursue the claim. The dissent's answer to that was that, in fact, mostly that the majority had made it up, that Panetti, in fact, did have an adequate opportunity to make his case of insanity, but failed to do it, just failed on the merits. It pointed out, for example, that the showing of insanity consisted of a one-page letter from a doctor, which was unsworn and which contained no diagnosis, plus a one-page letter from a law professor who attended the interview that the doctor held with Panetti. And the dissent's view was that this did not meet the threshold, the high, quote, high threshold, unquote, set out in Ford versus Wainwright for a display of mental incompetency. In any event, the majority opinion, having concluded that jurisdiction was proper under the AEDPA and that the lower court's decisions or the lower court's opportunities provided to the defendant were inadequate under Ford versus Wainwright, then addressed the main issue for which this case became known, and that is whether the standard for assessing insanity as the time for execution approaches, whether that standard as adopted by the Fifth Circuit was too restrictive, and the majority concluded that it was. It acknowledged that, yes, Panetti did understand that he was going to be executed and understood the state's description of its reason for wanting to execute him, but that was insufficient to meet the purposes for which Ford versus Wainwright requires that only a sane person be executed. And those purposes are that the defendant understand in more than merely a factually descriptive sense, but understand in some moral sense why it is that he was going to be executed. And the majority also pointed out that this was needed to vindicate both the rights of the victim's family and of society to assure itself that the prisoner to be executed was going to the death chamber knowing why he was there, having a, quote, rational understanding of why he was there. The dissent did not take that on directly. Instead, the dissent found that since there was no jurisdiction to hear this case, and since in any event, if there were jurisdiction, the Texas courts had provided an adequate opportunity for Panetti to establish his insanity, that this issue was not squarely before the court, but did take issue with the framework from which the majority analyzed the standard of insanity, pointing out that there was no actual Eighth Amendment analysis, much less even a citation to any language in Justice Powell's kind of controlling, concurring opinion in Ford versus Wainwright that supported the more involved and the more generous assessment of what the standard of insanity has to be. That is this, quote, rational understanding, unquote, standard that the majority adopted. All told, I think this death penalty opinion is of a piece with other recent death penalty opinions from recent years that have cut back at the margins of the death penalty. For example, in the decisions holding that the age at which a person can be executed cannot be less than 18, which itself had reversed a case only 15 years earlier. It seems to me that what we have here is a gradual cutting back of the death penalty, one little exception at a time, amounting, in my judgment, to an expression by the court and an invitation by the court to devolving standards of responsibility that mark the decline of a decaying society. But that, in any event, is the majority's holding. The case was reversed and sent back to the lower courts for a fuller fleshing out of the evidence showing Panetti's alleged inability to understand under what today's majority determined was the more generous and correct standard for deciding that question.